Previously on Snicktoons, special guest host Rob Luther from Turtle Tales Radio, who guest hosted for season 2 episode 1, has returned for season 2 episode 2. Honestly, the first two episodes were the first two parts of a two-part episode, and with episode 2 being Rob's introduction to X-Men the Animated Series, I just had to have him back on to help me break down that episode, but also to continue our conversation talking about X-Men in our childhoods. It's always so fun to hear fellow 90s kids and the kind of X-Men stuff they had growing up. Of course, with Rob being such a big video game fan, it was just so great to have him back. So make sure you go check out that past episode and stay tuned as a new special guest host helps me break down Season 2, Episode 3 of X-Men the Animated Series. All right, bubs, as you heard at the top of the show, I am back with a special guest host once again, and this guest host is our second returning host. So again, I was a huge fan of her podcast when I first discovered it early last year, been listening ever since. She was such a great guest to have, and I'm super excited to welcome back Noelle Reed from X-Men Unraveled. Noelle, welcome back to Saturday Morning Snicktoons.
Thanks so much for having me back.
Yeah, you know, I had a blast talking with you the first time, and there's so many great episodes with Storm or Rogue that I knew I had to bring you back to at least talk about one of those awesome characters in, like, you know, their main episode. So, yeah, definitely glad to have you back. But while we're on the subject, I have to ask, it's been quite a while since our last episode of X-Men Unraveled. When are we getting more?
I took a break to kind of catch up on my reading and my notes and everything. And I decided to kind of do a little reset to start season 2. So it'll be back on February 2nd.
Ooh, awesome. That's perfect. That'll probably be back before this episode even airs. So excellent.
Nice. Yeah, I'm super excited. I got to the point finally where Professor Xavier's recruiting the X-Men. And so I'm going to spend a few episodes just going through each of the OG recruits and who they are and get started. I'm so excited to get into the X-Men stories because it's been pretty sporadic on timelines since I follow it chronologically. Maybe there's been a character here and there, but they've all been pretty random or villains. So now I'm excited to get to the X-Men.
Yes, and I'm super excited for you to get there as well. I've loved your approach, and I'm super excited to see how you tackle these issues. Oh, super excited.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. Those 60s stories are a little crazy sometimes, but it'll be fun to talk about.
Yeah, on the last episode, I don't think it's aired. I think it comes out. So we're recording this on a Friday, and the next episode actually comes out tomorrow. But there was, and I don't know if you've been watching all the episodes or if you're just going back and watching like the ones that we're discussing. But in the episode that comes right before this one, it was Till Death Do Us Part 2. There's a scene where Sinister is talking to Scott and Jean, and he's kind of showing him like, you know, I've been following you guys for your whole lives. And he has this weird like slideshow type thing. And he, one of the like screenshots that he shows is like Scott and Jean as like super young and they're fighting the Locust. And I was like, oh man, I couldn't believe that there was like a Silver Age reference like this early in the show. And of course, as a kid, you have no idea what any of the images are. You just see them and think, oh, cool. But yeah, it was like they were fighting the Locust. I was like, oh man, like there's a villain who I have no idea if he has appeared since, you know, 1964, 65.
Yeah, I love that about the show. There's so much about the X-Men and the stories, and just if you don't know it, you're fine. You don't need to know it to appreciate it, but going back later and rewatching it and just catching all of the things that they managed to fit into the show is incredible.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And I've seen so, like, probably not every episode, you know, a million times, but quite a bit of them, probably that many times. And it's like, even now when I go back and watch, I'm still finding new stuff, you know, new references that I didn't pick up on any of the first few times I'd seen the episode, or images or anything like that. It's just, it's so cool to see just the layers of love that these creators had for this source material. It's so refreshing.
Yeah, I can never get over that when I'm watching, because the show was really my introduction to the X-Men. And then as I got older, I was like, why do I know so much about the X-Men? Because I didn't read the comics for a long time. And I was like, that show like taught me everything I needed to know.
Yes, it really is like such a perfect crash course for, like, you know, the previous, what, 16 or so odd years of Claremont. They put so much of his characterization into their takes on these characters. It's so, so great. And it's anyone like us who this was their, you know, their main piece of X-Men fandom. It was such an easy, like, we had such an easy time going into the X-Men comics. We really could pick it up like at any time in the 90s and not feel lost. Like, yeah, there's a lot of history there that we don't know, but like, we know these characters, you know, forwards and backwards. Like, we know their whole history and all the little like kinks and stuff in their histories and all that. Like, we know all of that stuff.
Yeah, it's just so impressive that they did that in a kids show. And these episodes are what, like 20, maybe 23 minutes long, and they fit all of that in there. I don't know how they did it. They just love the X-Men, which is so great.
Yes, and I feel like they got better at storytelling, you know, every episode, every season. Like the episode that we're going to talk about today, as I was watching it and taking my notes, I was realizing that like I wasn't pointing out silly logical flaws or anything. Like this was a really tight episode from start to finish, and like this season we're going to start seeing that almost every episode, where these episodes are so great. Like, yeah, it's, they're made for kids, so there's going to be logical leaps here and there, inconsistencies with animation too and stuff like that, but like this episode, I'm super excited for when we get to it. Obviously I want to talk to you a little bit about a few other things before we move to the episode, but yeah, even just watching that episode again today before recording, it's like, wow, they did such a great job with this episode in particular.
Yeah, I definitely felt the difference between this one and the last one that I joined the show for. There were a lot more silly things in that one compared to this. And that was even later in the maybe middle to end of the season one.
Yeah, I think, oh gosh, well, I think that was like episode 8 or so, the Unstoppable Juggernaut. So yeah, you know, middle of the season. And yeah, it had, you know, I think the writer that wrote that episode, that was her first episode that she had written, and it was the only one in season one. And so that episode was kind of like an outlier for the whole season one story. But like, even so, that one to this one, yeah, a big leap in quality.
Yeah, for sure. This one was very, I was looking for things like that this time because they're fun, but I really didn't. There's only like two little things that I thought of to laugh about.
Yeah, no, it was like very dramatic and very serious approach, which I mean, I love seeing that, especially like as an adult. It's like, wow, like, there was a lot of drama in this episode, and like it was actually done really well.
Yeah, with such a kind of weird character as the villain is.
Definitely. Okay, so you'd mentioned like by the time you started getting into the comics, you felt like you knew these characters because of the show, and that you kind of came to the X-Men comics a little bit later. I know I started collecting the comics like in the early 90s. Really started reading like storyline by storyline right around Age of Apocalypse. But, you know, in addition to watching the cartoon and reading the comics, like there was a lot of stuff I was doing. I was collecting the toys. I was collecting the trading cards. I was buying like Wizard magazines if they had X-Men on the cover. I was playing X-Men video games. I think I had I'm pretty sure I had like an X-Men Halloween costume that I would wear. But I wanted to ask you, because it's not something that we talked about last time you were on, but growing up as an X-Men fan, thanks to this show, did you collect anything like toys or cards or stickers or anything like that as a kid?
I did. So I didn't have a huge toy collection. My parents would like buy me random ones that I liked. The one I remember most fondly, oddly enough, is a Storm toy. And it was the one where she had the light up lightning bolt on her suit. So you like press the little button and her lightning bolt on her chest would light up, which I thought was the most incredible feat of technology that had ever been created at that point in time. And then my other one that I had that I can remember is I had a little Rogue action figure, and she would pull like her right arm down so it would lock, and then there was a little lever on her back and she would punch. And I thought that was awesome. I was always making her punch whatever other toys we had.
I remember when the Rogue action figure came out. It was a huge deal because up to that point, the only like female character that we had as a toy was that Storm that you were talking about. And I think we had two different versions, like one in a black costume, and then a little bit later they released a new one in the white costume to be more in line with the cartoon. But like we didn't get a Jubilee or a Jean or anything like that. And we finally got Rogue. It was like a couple years after the toy line had actually launched. And I remember how big of a deal that was. I would go like every Kmart or Walmart or Target store that I went to for like months. I never was able to find the Rogue. And then there was a super Kmart like way far away from our house by this mall that we used to go to. And they just happened to have like five Rogue action figures, and so I was finally able to get one. But I remember like how awesome that figure was, or at least I thought it was awesome as a kid. Probably not all that great compared to like the Rogue Marvel Legends figures that you're going to get nowadays. But yeah, I remember that figure was so good. Which Storm did you have, the black or the white costume?
I had the white because since the show was my intro, I wanted the white one.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I probably would have gone with that as well, as for my first Storm. I actually got when the first wave came out in like 91, I got like all of them. I'm kind of
Nice.
sound like feeling braggy, like, oh, I got them all because I was awesome. But no, I think it was just one of those things where I was with my dad one weekend day and I guess I was behaving well, and so we went into the toy store and they had a bunch of them, and I don't think I got them all at once. It was like over a few weekends, over a few months. But yeah, I remember like collecting at least all the X-Men from that first wave, because like I never had the that first Apocalypse, with like the where his arms and legs would like grow and extend and all that. But I did have
Oh, yeah.
like all of the X-Men from that first line.
That's awesome. Yeah, I didn't have a lot of them because I only wanted the girl characters. So if I had gone to the store and there was a boy character, I'd be like, no thanks, I'll wait for the girls.
Which like every other wave, was all boys, or at least all men. It's like every line had a Wolverine, like a new version of Wolverine. And then like sometimes they would have a Cyclops or a Beast in there, usually like a bad guy or two, and it was always Magneto or Apocalypse or Mr. Sinister or Sabretooth. Like we never got like a Mystique action figure, at least not that I can remember.
That would have
And
been
then yeah,
awesome.
like yeah, that would have been so cool. And they could have done something cool, like given her like swappable heads, because they did that with Morph eventually when they finally dropped the Morph figure. It had like a Cyclops head and like a Wolverine head, so you can like swap the heads out. They could have
Oh,
done that
nice.
with Mystique too, and that would have been cool, like a Pyro head or an Avalanche head or something like that.
Yeah, that would have been super awesome.
Or
Now I
Senator Kelly
understand.
head would, well, Gambit would
Oh,
have been like
Wolverine.
for the show, Gambit would have been best, right? But Senator Kelly would have been pretty cool.
That would have been, man, missed opportunity.
Yeah, I don't know what it was, because I would have bought an action figure for any character in the show. Like I would have bought an action figure of the president on her treadmill or on her stationary bicycle even. Like I would have bought that figure too. But oh well, I guess marketing research said little boys don't want to play with girls, I guess. Whatever.
Guess so.
Early 90s marketing research. Okay, so in addition to your Storm and your Rogue action figure, which I'm not surprised that those would be the first two that you would get. Also, the fact that they were the first two that were made obviously makes sense, but knowing that they're your favorite, do you still have those?
It's a good question. They could still be somewhere at my dad's house because he keeps everything. If I went through it, there's a very good chance that they are there, but I do not know where they are.
Oh, man. Okay, well, I don't mean to give you more homework, but next time you're at your dad's house, you have to see if you can find those. I don't have any of my original figures from when I was a kid. Like, I was able to replace a few of them. I have a couple of, like, the Wave 1. Like, I have Wolverine and Storm and Cyclops and Archangel, like, still in box and stuff, but the boxes are all beat up, but whatever. But yeah, I don't have any of the ones from my actual childhood. I don't know what happened to them either. Like, I don't know if they were tossed one of the times that we moved, or like if I just thought to myself, like, I don't need these anymore, which seems weird because I've always liked the X-Men. Like, but yeah, I don't have any of those.
Yeah, I'm going to have, you know, I have to do a lot of digging, but I might be inspired to do it now because I do have one of my friends bought me a new Storm. Probably about a year or so for Christmas, but and to find that original one, I bet her lightning bolt doesn't work anymore, but if it's still there somewhere, I would love to see it again. I know Rogue would be in pretty bad shape. I feel like paint was already coming off of her by the time I lost her, but still it'd be fun to see again.
Yeah, just, you know, pick it up, relive some of your old memories, you know, happy memories of Rogue just beating the crap out of whoever else, because, I mean, what else are you going to do with Rogue? That's kind of her thing, right? Just beat everybody up.
Yep. But, I don't know what that says, that she's one of my favorites now that you say that, but.
No, it's fine. No, Rogue is awesome. Like, I'm sorry, but like 90s cartoon Rogue is like one of the best takes on any X-Men character of all time. Like,
oh yeah,
you're absolutely right on with Rogue and Storm. Like, I mean, these are definitive takes on the character for sure.
Yes.
So in addition to those two action figures, did you have any other stuff?
Yeah. So I had one comic that I still have to this day. I remember my dad taking me, I was with him at the comic shop down the road, and he said, pick whatever you want. And so there was, it's, I had to look up the number, but it's X-Men Volume 2, number 31, with Betsy Braddock and Quanon on the front. And I don't know why, I probably just thought it was two cool ladies on the front. Then I found out later down the road when I actually read the comics, I was like, that was a really problematic comic for my first introduction to Psylocke and that whole thing. But yeah, I still have it. And then my brother and I played, what was it, the Sega game? Was it for Sega? The one where, like, the part I can remember the most is Jean Grey flying in to save you all the time.
Yeah, I think that would be the first one.
Yeah, we had that. We played that a lot. I was terrible at it, but I had a lot of fun.
Everybody was. That game is so hard.
Well, that game is so hard. My brother was always a, like, video game prodigy. So I would be surprised if he didn't beat it. But I just remember everything would get hard and I would say, here, beat this for me. And I'd make him get through the hard parts so I could move on.
Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, I had the second one. I had X-Men 2 Clone Wars for the Sega Genesis, which is an awesome game. If you ever have the chance to play it, or if you've played it, then you know. But it's super awesome. I highly recommend it. And on my last two episodes, my guest host, Rob, in addition to his Turtles podcast, he has another one that he does with, like, his childhood best friend called The Retro Junkies. And this most recent episode that they dropped, I guess last week, they covered that game, X-Men 2, The Clone Wars. And I love that one because it was a lot of fun. And, like, I could actually get, like, to the, like, third or fourth level. But the one that you're talking about, the first X-Men game, I don't think I ever got past, like, that first level. I think the boss fight in that first level was the Juggernaut, and I don't even know if I even ever made it that far, but I loved renting it, you know, and spending hours not ever getting past like the first or second jump. But it's the X-Men, so like of course I'm gonna try and play it over and over.
Yes, you just needed somebody to hand the controller to who was good at it. My memory is most vivid of the first level dying. That's probably why Gene is so prominent in my memory, because I was always dying.
Yeah, I think like the first two or three times you fall off the screen, she'll like pick you up with her telekinesis and like drop you back where you were. But then after like two or three times, she doesn't do it anymore. And so then it's like, all right, well, might as well be game over now.
Yeah, it was always bad when you just go a little way and she already had to save you. It was like, oh, this is not going to go well.
Oh, yeah. Now, that game was cool. I liked that it had like the different like summon type things that you can do. So like you only had, I think it was like four playable characters you could play as, like Cyclops or Gambit or Wolverine or Nightcrawler. I think those were the four characters that you could play as. But you could have Rogue could show up, or like Iceman or Storm. And I think maybe Colossus was like the one other character that would like show up if you had like so many times per level or whatever that you can call your X-Men to assist. And I think Colossus was like the fourth one that you could call, but it's been a while since I've played that one, just because like my memories of it as a kid is like, oh, that one was really hard. And I could just watch like a YouTube video of someone else playing it and be like, oh, that was satisfying. Like I finally seen the end, but I'm not going to torture myself trying to get through it.
Yeah, no, it was painful for sure. And yet my memories of it are very fond.
Awesome. Yeah. So I had those. There were some stickers that I used to collect too, from like, you know, the little like quarter machines or whatever that you'd throw a quarter in there, like the grocery store, and spin the knob and then like a little capsule thing would pop out. And I don't know what company made them or anything, but I had a couple stickers that were of the cartoon as well. And like, oh, nice. I would keep those in the same like little box that I had all my trading cards. Those were pretty cool. Yeah.
And yeah, I had togs. Oh, that's cool. Yeah. I actually had a lot of trading cards, because my dad would buy the boxes because he wanted Captain America or Spider-Man, but he'd like collect as many sets as he could. And so he has these old binders just full of them. We like spent time over Christmas going through them and everything. And I thought I had lost, because he would let me keep doubles of the cards that I wanted. So I actually, in a box, this is why I have hope for Rogue and Storm, we found in a box my pile of old cards that I had picked out. So I have like couple Gambits, a bunch of different versions of Phoenix, because I thought she was super cool when I was a kid, and like the whole original X-Men team. I couldn't tell you what years these are from, but I was pretty excited to have them back.
Nice. That's awesome. Do they have Jim Lee art? Do you know?
I don't know if these do. No, I don't think so. Not in the little bunch I'm seeing.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I know the first series of like X-Men, like only, it was just X-Men. That was like Jim Lee did all the artwork on each card. It's like 100 cards or something cool. Like that was the, yeah. And so that was wave one. So those are awesome. That was wave one. And then wave two was like the following year. So it was like 92 that they dropped those. And it had like all the new artists that came onto the series. Like both of the Kubert brothers and a couple other artists and stuff. But yeah, nice. Those ones have some pretty good artwork too. I think I like the Adam and Andy Kubert artwork the best, but I think there's like a couple from Alan Davis, and I think even some from like Joe Quesada and Al Milgrom and stuff that were working on like X Factor. I always liked that they would use, well, I didn't know it back then, but like looking back at the cards as an adult, when like once you start paying attention to creative teams and stuff, and then going back and seeing like, oh, that's cool that they use like the actual artists from the books Because then, you know, it's recognizable artwork and stuff, and people that are in the shop or whatever will recognize the artwork and perhaps be more inclined to buy it. But yeah, looking back now, it's like, oh man, that's awesome that they would use the artists from the books.
Yeah, that is super cool. I wish my dad had been a bigger fan of the X-Men, because then I probably would have a lot of old X-Men sets. But we just got I just got the random ones that were left over in whatever sets he bought.
Right on. Yeah, there's a lot of good Marvel sets too from the 90s though. Like they did like three or four different waves of just like Marvel superheroes. And then they did I want to say it was like 93 or 94, there's like this set called Fleer Ultra, and the cards are like two or three times as thick as the regular cards, and they had like this plastic on them, so they were like super glossy. Like I remember getting those cards, and those things were fancy. Like they didn't even come in like a little plastic package. They actually came in like a cardboard box type thing where you had to like a pack of cigarettes, even, where you had to like open the top and pull the cards out that way. And there was only like 8 cards in a pack. Like that was pretty fancy stuff. But yeah, those are really good cards.
Yeah, that's awesome. That would make it so fun to get them.
Yeah. It's like you feel favorite. Legit. Like, yeah, these are real things.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember my favorite group. And again, I don't know what year these from or anything, but there was this, it was like Halloween costume X-Men. And the only one I remember in their costume was Psylocke wearing like a French maid costume.
Yeah, that sounds about right. What they would put her in. Man, I don't remember those at all. I'm going to have to look that up.
Yeah, it was my favorite like group of cards that we had. I didn't see them though when I was there over Christmas though. I'm now gonna have to look for that specific group of cards because I loved it. But everyone is in like a different costume.
Weird. That's cool.
Yeah. Oh, I found some pictures. Storm was a witch, which she was
okay,
a witch.
Okay. Yeah.
And then they had Professor X. You remember Fantasia, the like wizard hat that Nikki was wearing?
Oh, sure.
Professor X is in like a wizard hat like that. Colossus is a vampire.
Huh.
And Wolverine is a pirate.
Nice. Wow, that's interesting. Interesting choices.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. I loved those ones, though. I got to find them.
Wow, I'm going to have to look that up. I would imagine that Cyclops would be dressed as like a police informant or something, you know, something that's like not fun.
I know, something boring.
Like a tax agent or something like that.
Oh my God, you're going to be shocked. I found him and he is Elvis.
Wow.
He has a microphone and a guitar and the white high-collared Elvis suit.
Okay, that is completely unexpected for Cyclops. Wow, interesting.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to spend some time on eBay after we're done recording this and see if I can track those down. Those sound awesome.
I know, they were so great.
It's the closest I can think is like, do you remember the McDonald's like Happy Meal toys where it was like all the Looney Tunes, but each of the Looney Tunes was dressed as a different like Justice League character?
Yes. I feel like
that's how weird of a mashup these Halloween costumes are.
Yeah, just about. Whoever came up with them though was pretty smart, because I mean, I don't know. I'm speaking with like from my 4 or 5 year old self. I thought they were the greatest things in the world.
No, I would have eaten those up as a kid. That would have been so fun.
Yeah. I don't know how we ended up with those, because my dad, like I said, he didn't buy specifically X-Men stuff, but somehow we ended up with the Halloween cards.
Oh, that's cool. Maybe it was like a promo or something, you know, where you went into the comic shop and they'd hand you a pack or something like that. And that's why you have those. Awesome. Who knows?
Yeah, you know, he was friends with the guy who ran the comic shop, so maybe he just gave him a set and he's like, all right, I'll take them. Maybe my kids will like them.
Oh, that's perfect. See, like, those are the kind of friends that I want to have. Like, now as a 36-year-old, like, I don't want to be friends with, like, FBI agents or judges or, you know, people that can get me out of stuff. Like, I just want cool friends, like comic shop owners and fellow podcasters and stuff like that.
Yes. Yes. People who appreciate the same things at best.
Agreed. Agreed. Okay. Wow. That's awesome. So it sounds like you had some pretty cool X-Men stuff as a kid. You mentioned you only had one comic, but recently on your Instagram, you had shared one that you got for your birthday. So again, happy belated birthday. Kind of makes sense, you know, knowing your name and like, oh, she had a birthday close to Christmas. Okay. There you go.
Yes.
I should have just assumed that your birthday was at some point in December. but either way, so you shared, and I'm super jealous because this is an awesome issue, but why don't you tell us, you got this gift for your birthday, just this past December. And as an X-Men fan, this is like a huge thing. So why don't you tell us a little bit about that? Cause like I said, I was super jealous seeing that post.
Yeah, I was so excited. So it was actually my boyfriend who got it for me, and he's really bad at keeping surprises. So I thought I was going to get it out of him what he got me. And I couldn't figure it out. And I said, is it a book? And he's really bad at lying. And he did this little, and I was like, okay, it's a book. But it never crossed my mind that he actually spent the time on comic websites, which he knows nothing about. And so he just picked a comic that he thought was cool for no other reason. And he got me Uncanny X-Men number 221, which is the first appearance of Mr. Sinister. Which he couldn't have done better if he had known what I care about. Yeah. So the cover has Havoc and Wolverine. And I ended up having to go read it on Marvel Unlimited. So I was like I'm not going to take it out of the plastic. And yeah. But when I saw Mr. Sinister was in it, I was like, do you know who Mr. Sinister is? He's like, a bad guy? I'm like, well, yes, but one of my top three favorite bad guys ever. And so, yeah, I was so excited to get this comic. I've started buying comics here and there, just old issues, but I haven't spent the money to buy any good ones. So this is my first super awesome, nice comic.
Yeah, no, that's super cool. Like that, what a great milestone to have, especially for a Mr. Sinister fan. I remember when you did your little mini episode where you kind of followed Nathaniel Essex in Victorian London, and you were kind of going on back then oh, I really love this character, and you know, I can't wait till I finally get you know, to his issues, which is a long time from now. So that's awesome that you got that. And kudos to your boyfriend. What a great gift.
I know. And he had no idea. He didn't even read that as one of the features of this comic. He was like, I don't know, it's from 1987 and it sounds cool. Here you go. I was like, oh my God, it's Mr. Sinister. And I just have to say, I know Mr. Sinister is super evil, but I still love him.
So let me ask you this then, as a Mr. Sinister fan, compared to his earliest appearances, how do you feel about the way they've been writing Mr. Sinister for the last decade?
I actually really enjoy it because I feel like they've made him so fun, and it's been a fun transition because I liked him when he was just the scary bad guy, but now he has such a hilarious personality, and I love the newer stuff when he's on the council, and just everything he says I think is the best.
I feel like if they end the Krakoa era at some point in the next year or two, they really need to put Mr. Sinister and Emma Frost and Monet in a book together. And just call it extravagant X-Men and just let them just be in the book with each other and just having a fabulous time. Right. Cause that seems to be what those three are all about nowadays.
Yes. And I love the fact that they just lean into his ridiculous costume, which has always been ridiculous, but now it's now fabulous. And I just can't get over it. It's like everything that Mr. Sinister could have been if you could just erase the part where he's a Nazi conspirator. That would be great. But I love this character. Him, Emma Frost, and Monet would be hilarious together. I don't even care if they do anything major. I would just like to see like a kind of like a reality show of them living their amazing life, their best lives.
Right, like they'd all be just hanging out and like eating the only the nicest food and drinking like only the nicest wine, and it would just be them gossiping about how basic all the other mutants in the world are. And like that would
Yes.
be the book. There would be no storylines or anything. It would just be them just like trash talking everybody else. I just think that would be like that would I think that would sell.
I would buy that immediately. That would be so fun because they're so snarky and just, I love it. I can't get enough of that. Just to hear them talking about everyone, like to hear them talk about other people's costumes and hair or who's sleeping with who would be hilarious.
And I think you could probably have some fun with like how much Emma loves Scott and how obsessed with Scott Mr. Sinister has been. Like you could do a whole
Yes.
issue of them just talking about how great Cyclops is and Monet just being there like, no, he's not. Like he's the worst. Like of all of the characters, Cyclops is the worst of them. Like
Yes, and to hear to read those three just make fun of each other, especially for the Scott thing. Like, really? Oh, everyone, you have all the mutants in the world, the best there are on the planet. And Scott is your thing.
Like, I mean, I have to admit, I like Cyclops. Like, he's in my top three of X-Men characters. So, like, I'm definitely guilty of being on the side where, like, no, guys, Cyclops is actually really cool. But like, I don't look at him with ruby colored, ruby quartz glasses. Like, I know that he, for like 90% of the time, he's just a stick in the mud. But I like for the 5% of the time where he's actually cool, he's just so cool.
Yeah, you like, you know what he is, you appreciate him for who he is, and when he branches out, even better.
Yes, like when he finally lets loose with an optic blast, and it's like, all right, there we go, Scott. More of that, more of that. Like, I know it's controversial, but like after the Messiah Complex storyline, where he like commissioned the murder squad that was Wolverine's X-Force, like that was a cool moment. Like more of Cyclops as like the revolutionary. Like I feel like I was the only one during that whole time that didn't think Cyclops was the bad guy, but oh well, whatever.
He needs a defender, for sure.
Yeah, it's like it's cliche, I feel, nowadays to be like an X-Men podcaster who likes Cyclops because there's a lot of us out there, but yeah. I mean, he's not my favorite, he's my third favorite, but still.
You're like, let's put him in his place.
Yeah. I like him when he's cool, not so much in the cartoon or most of the 90s comics. Certainly not in like the early X-Factor comics where he just, abandons his family for no reason, but
Yeah.
like some of the stuff after that, he's been pretty cool.
Yeah. And he seems to be much more chill now since he's living with Jean and Logan.
All right, yeah, we could talk about the Krakoa era and modern X-Men until we're blue in the face, but I think we've had a good conversation. I've enjoyed like getting to know some more of your childhood fandom and hearing about the toys that you had and the video games and the cards that you've collected and stuff. So I think if you're ready, Noelle, we can jump into our episode breakdown. What do you say?
Sounds good.
So, Bubs, today we are covering X-Men the Animated Series, Season 2, Episode 3, Whatever It Takes. This episode first premiered on November 6th, 1993, and the episode was written by Julia Jane Lewald. So, Noelle, as is custom on this show, you are the guest. Why don't you kick our episode off?
All right, so it starts at, I guess, the base of Mount Kilimanjaro, where we see a young kid who's a mutant with super speed powers running around and he's like hanging out with these other kids and they're sad because he's so much faster. And one thing that I loved is he's in a Michael Jordan jersey. Just to really say where this is in time, he's in a Michael Jordan jersey. But as they're having fun, he sees a big, like, yellow bright light open up on the side of Mount Kilimanjaro. And he gets terrified, but the other two can't see it and kind of laugh at him at first. And so that's our first sign that something important is going on. And then we hit. Yeah. And then next scene is we're back at in the United States at the X Mansion, and Storm is returning from the hospital after she was attacked in the mob situation. And Jean and Beast are looking at a map with a little bright light flashing right where we saw the whole scene with the boys in Tanzania. And Jean says she was using Cerebro to look for a sign of Xavier, but she didn't find him. She found a tear in the astral plane. And Beast thinks it's the result of Bishop's time travel. And so when
Storm comes, which seems weird.
Yeah, it's like, why would it be there? I don't know if necessarily the astral plane and time are the same thing. Like, I don't know if messing up one messes up the other. I don't think so. But
yeah, I wouldn't think that would make any difference. My only guess for that, Noelle, the reason why we have Beast mentioning Bishop is because the first episode of the Days of Future Past 2 part was also written by Julia Leewald. So I think she was just referencing back to her past episode. But yeah, like that was the one note that I had for like the opening scenes. Like, why would Beast jump to a conclusion that something that happened to do with like the temporal plane would disrupt the astral plane? But whatever.
Yeah. It's like, I thought you were smart, Beast. You have all the books. And so then when Storm comes in, she's looked at the map and they're talking about everything's going on. And she freaks out because she sees it's right where she used to live. And then she just says the name Mijinari. We don't know who or why. So then we immediately flash back to Mount Kilimanjaro. And out of the bright lights is a giant monster dude. He looks like really armored. It's not how I would picture the Shadow King. But he turns into kind of a ghost after that, flies through the air, swoops down on the mutant boy that we met and possesses him and like lifts him up in the air. And I thought the other boy's reaction was really weird because he's literally levitating. That is not his power. They've never seen him do this before. And they're like, stop messing around.
Yes, that's like one of the few like logic flaws, you know, because we had said that we were watching this episode and like looking for funny stuff because, you know, it's fun to do that. And there wasn't much. But yeah, this is another one of those. It's like he's terrified and he's like trying to run away and then he stops and he starts levitating and then his eyes are glowing and they're like, ha ha ha, you're such a jokester. Like such a fun, like just weird moment.
Yeah, and they don't realize anything's wrong till now he has the Shadow King's voice. And they're like, oh, I guess this is a big deal. We're going to run away now.
Yeah, it's like, I don't think you're done with puberty yet, bro. So why do you sound super grown up all of a sudden and not just grown up, but like evil?
Yeah. Yeah. Why do you sound like a villain? You were really chill just playing soccer a few minutes ago.
Oh, right. Yeah. And so then the scene changes. We check in on our like B plot or C plot even for the episode. So we leave Africa and we leave North America. And this time we go down to South America. We check in on like the Amazon River where some like random pirate guy, like I don't know why there's just like a random pirate guy, but he's got a little boat and he's bringing Wolverine like across the Amazon River somewhere. And we learn that Wolverine is currently on a trek to track down Morph having disappeared in the previous episode after Cyclops was able to, temporarily defeat Mr. Sinister. And so I like this moment. I didn't write any of the lines down or anything, but I like this moment because they're kind of having this talk back and forth about how like the Amazon is kind of like a dangerous place, which is just hilarious because, I mean, come on, it's Wolverine. But the guy like turns his head and then Wolverine just says something like, "I can smell morph," or something along those lines. And then the guy turns back to where Wolverine was previously standing and he's just gone. And it's not like they were on a dock or like at a town or anything. They were just like in the middle of the river. And then Wolverine has just disappeared.
Yeah. And I wondered why he had to escape so quickly. I mean, the boat guy does not seem to care about much of the world outside of his boat. But Wolverine's like, "I got to vanish."
Yeah. Like ninja style, like, "I'm out of here." He can't just tell the guy like, "Hey, pull the boat over," or whatever, or just like keep the scent until they get to whatever dock they're heading to and then track it from there. He just like just up and just like disappears. The guy didn't even hear like a splash or anything. So it's like, all right, what did Wolverine do? Did he learn how to teleport or something? And like they just didn't explain that or whatever. But yeah, I thought that part was awesome too, because, you know, it does kind of play into the fact that Wolverine is something of a samurai and something of a ninja, so I like that he could just vanish.
Yeah, it was impressive. And so the boat guy also has a monkey, and he was holding the monkey, and he somehow got the monkey off of his shoulder or wherever the monkey was, places him on it looked like a lantern. So he had to do that without the monkey making noise too.
And then the monkey looks just as confused that he's gone. when the pirate guy looks back, you know, he's like, "Hey, what the heck?" And like the monkey's like, "I don't know what just happened."
"I don't know. I don't know where my new best friend just went. He vanished." Yeah, we'll have to chalk it up to the samurai skills, because it was a pretty good vanishing act.
Yeah, definitely. For sure. So I think I'll give it back to you, because we are going back to Africa and there's some good stuff in here. So I'll let you break this one down too.
Yeah, so it gives a little location. It says we're now in Dodoma, which I could be saying wrong, a city in Tanzania. And we see a gust of wind like going through a city street, and you look up and there's Storm and Rogue flying. I had to stop here because I had two really important questions. One is, they know the problem is on the astral plane, the psychic event. And Jean just is like, "No, you guys go without me." I really can't figure out why Jean decided to let Storm and Rogue, two people with no psychic powers, go and deal with this major event that she found using Cerebro. Maybe I'm unfair on Jean. Guess...
No. You're right on. Yeah, why didn't Jean go? Like, they showed in season one that she's more than capable of, like, going into the field. Like, she was there in the final episode, and she was there in a couple other episodes, like, doing pretty important stuff. But yeah, like, Rogue and Storm, like, it makes sense that Storm would go, because it's, you know, where she's from, and she's familiar with it, and it's probably something personal, maybe. But yeah, like, was Rogue the right one to send? Probably not. Like, it probably should have been Storm and Jean, but, you know, whatever. I think the writer probably just liked writing Rogue and Storm better, so I'm not going to falter.
Totally fair. Totally fair. But this is probably one of the only stories where Rogue is actually pretty useless. And the other thing I couldn't get over is Rogue and Storm, from what we see, flew all the way on their own power from New York to Tanzania. And I had to look it up because I was upset about this. It is 7,447 miles from Westchester, New York, to Mount Kilimanjaro. Why did they not get to use the jet?
Let's see. Morph stole it in the last episode and he left in it. So maybe they didn't have it anymore. Maybe. Okay. But that's a bit of a leap because they still have like the small, like, one man blackbird things that they can fly around. So, like, why not take a couple of those? But yeah.
Yeah, and I just have to wonder how long it took to get there, because I don't know how fast they can fly or how long they can fly super fast, but that is a long way. But anyway, on their little journey, Storm tells Rogue that they're heading back actually to the village where she lived at one point in her life. And so they fly past the city and get to Mount Kilimanjaro. And then they see the village where Storm used to live, and it's a mess. The houses are on fire and fields are on fire. And Storm is obviously very upset because she actually knows people who live there. And she summons some rain, and I had to write this down because it was very poetic. She says, she's calling to nature and says, a wall of rain to quench the flames. And then she puts out all of the fires. And Rogue saves some cows from being crushed by the wall of the building. So I guess I take it back. She wasn't totally useless in this whole story, but she did save the cows.
So in my last episode, or my last two episodes with Rob, we were kind of talking early on that, like, we were both really excited for Beast to come back because, you know, he had been in prison for most of the first season. And I was kind of saying, like, I'm thinking that Beast is going to be like the sleeper best character of this season. But by the time Rob and I got done breaking down the second episode, we were both kind of in agreement that, like, Storm is going to be the MVP of this season. Like, everything that she has said so far has just been, like, so perfectly spot on for the character. And yeah, this episode, you're putting the spotlight on Storm really for the first time. I'm definitely thinking that Storm is going to be the MVP of this season.
Yeah, they really played up her, who she is now, who she was. And you can see how she becomes the person that she is by the time, this time of the story. So yeah, I think you're totally right there. And so they get to, after the fires are out, everything's safe. They go into the village and Storm finds her old friend whose name is Shawnee. And they start talking. Rogue's talking to some other people around. And she says that a kid with an attitude, in her southern accent, caused the destruction. And then Storm finds out from Shawnee that it was Mjolnir, who's the name that she said earlier when she saw the map. And Rogue is immediately like, all right, let's go beat him up. Storm is like, oh, wait, we can't do that. That's my son. And I had to pause at that moment because I was like, wait, what? I hadn't rewatched, like, up until this point, until getting ready for this episode. And I was like, wait, did they really change Storm? This seems strange. So it threw me for a little bit of a loop. But it turns out he's actually her godson, but they just call each other mother and son.
Right. It's like, oh, you shouldn't have paused it. You only had, like, one more scene to get through, and then they would they would explain it. But yeah. but before they explain it, like I said, it is one scene later. So after Storm is like, he's my son, the scene changes because, you know, that's a great, like, super dramatic moment to stop the scene on. Why not? And so from there, we actually go back to Brazil. So and I love this part too. So Wolverine has finally managed to find, like, some sort of a settlement here in the rainforest. And naturally he finds, like, the one bar that's in, it's probably just a town that's literally a bar and, like, a general store, but either way he finds the bar. And as he's walking into the bar, we see these two characters walk out. And I just love, because we get, cameos of two of Wolverine's, like, earliest villains from his solo title in the late 80s. We get, Bloodscream and Roughhouse. So I just loved seeing those characters. Now, they don't talk or they don't say anything to Wolverine, but those two guys walking out of the bar, that was Bloodscream and Roughhouse. I was like, yes, like, cameos galore. I love it. And of course, Wolverine walks into the bar, and there's like a guy behind the bar, assuming that the bartender was making some sort of a joke. Wolverine comes in, and I don't even remember what he says, but he did some comment. And of course, the guy behind the bar is like, oh, everybody's a critic. And then Wolverine's like, all right, cut the crap, Morph. Like, I'm here to take you in. You know, like, we got to get you back and get you help. And of course, Morph's like having none of that. He like turns into Jean Grey, and like, just, he just hurts Wolverine's feelings. You know, like, he just he just insults the guy and runs away.
That was really rough to watch. I had to write down one of the things he said because it was so cruel. Only a friend could do this to you. So he's Worf is looks and sounds just like Jean Grey, and he says, "When I'm with you, all I can think about is how much I'm in love with Cyclops." And then he just laughs hysterically.
Yes.
Going for the jugular there.
Yeah, like wastes no time. Just like, hey, you know, don't love you at all. Completely in love with Cyclops. All right, peace out. Like, have fun crying, loser. And he just like runs away. Yeah. I didn't want it to rip off that wound, so I just put in my notes, he hurts Wolverine's feelings. Because, you know, I'm like, I want to give the guy a break. Like, I love Wolverine. Like, let's give him some time to heal. Like, his heart doesn't heal as quickly as the rest of his body.
No, that was so mean. I was like, wow, Morph. I wish you weren't back, buddy. That was cruel.
Like, he so far in this series, like, he's a bigger Wolverine villain than Sabretooth is.
Oh yeah, at least, you know, well, Sabretooth isn't tearing his heart out and bidding on it.
All right, yeah. So from there we go back to Africa, and then I think I'm just gonna let you break down all the Storm and Rogue stuff, and I'll just cover the Wolverine stuff.
All right, that works. So yeah, after Storm says, "Oh my God, that's my son," we see Jannari possessed, and he's speaking with the demon voice and says, "She's returned as I planned." And he calls Storm a godmother to this body, slave to this soul, and says that he finally is going to get Storm back in the under the power of the Shadow King. So then we go back to Storm and Rogue, and we get a little bit of background now on who exactly all of these people are to Storm. Storm and Shani were friends, and Shani is Mishinari's biological mom, but she had trouble giving birth to him, and both she and Mishinari almost died, and Storm was taking care of the baby while the midwife tried to save Shani. And so Storm gave the baby CPR and saved his life. And so ever since then, she always kind of was a second mom to him. She took care of Shani and Mishinari while Shani was recovering from the birth. So she's like really part of their family. Then Storm left. And so she wasn't there when Mishinari got his mutant powers. So he's a super speedster. And they realize that whatever has changed Mishinari, they don't know what it is yet, but it happened at the same exact time that Jean saw the tear in the astral plane. And then we get the confrontation between the Shadow King possessing Mishinari and Storm. And Storm tells the Shadow King to leave Mishinari alone, to do whatever he wants, if he'll leave the boy alone. Since she knows that he's really only doing this because of her. So he says to Storm, "Well, I'll meet you at the mountain." And Storm's like, "Okay, I have to go deal with this." Rogue tries to talk her out of it and says the Shadow King has almost killed Professor Xavier in the past. But Storm says that anything that Rogue could actually do would just hurt her godson. So Storm flies away and Rogue goes after her. Storm confronts the Shadow King, and he says that since Xavier trapped him in the astral plane, he needs more power to rebuild his empire. He's like the king of thieves in Cairo, basically. So he wants to possess Storm and have her power to do that. And Storm agrees and gets possessed by the Shadow King.
So I was going to say, did you ever watch the show Legion?
I did not.
Oh, man. Okay. Lots of Shadow King stuff in there. And they do like address the fact that like Xavier and the Shadow King had like a showdown on the astral plane way back when. It's a very good show. Not a whole lot of episodes either. I think like each season was 9 episodes or so, 12 episodes, something like that. So I think all said and done, there was only 3 seasons and it was maybe 30 episodes. It's definitely worth watching. If you could find the time. Very good show. Lots of weird stuff, which is to be expected with like a Shadow King and a story about psychics and stuff. And of course, the character Legion as well. But yeah, really good show. I know it's completely off topic here, but we're finally talking about the Shadow King in this cartoon. And so, Shadow King's got like, he's got to be like one of the best live action villains that we've seen just because of that series.
I need to watch it. I haven't seen it yet, but I need to.
It's
I thought
very
it was
good.
interesting. I liked how they hinted at the past between Xavier and the Shadow King, because in the comics, that's when Professor Xavier first sees Storm. He doesn't. She's a little kid at that point, but he at least sees her and knows she's a mutant when she's working for the Shadow King as a little kid, a little tiny thief.
Yep. And correct me if I'm wrong, Noelle, but if I remember correctly, Xavier kind of references that moment, like that battle on the astral plane between him and the Shadow King. Like he kind of uses that moment as the basis for like his dream. Like that was when he realized that he had to stop evil mutants if he ever wanted to realize his dream of, peaceful coexistence. And that battle is kind of what inspired him to like to found the X-Men. I might be misremembering that, but I thought it was like, I thought at one point in the comics he referenced that battle as like the turning point for him.
Yeah, he did. And I don't remember exactly where it was now. But I remember reading that he kind of hadn't thought about mutants being evil. And so it like set him on the quest not only to keep mutants safe, but also keep humans safe from evil mutants. And it was that run-in with the Shadow King.
Yeah, very cool. Yeah, Shadow King like is super underrated villain, and I don't even remember if he shows up again in this series. I think maybe like much later on as like a lackey to Apocalypse in like a storyline that's way, way far out. But yeah, I don't remember him showing up as like a regular, like a recurring villain in the series. So they kind of had like one shot, and I thought that they did like a pretty good job of explaining who the character was and like what all of his motivations were in this like what 22, 23 minute episode.
Yeah, I was really surprised because I actually thought, did I miss something at some point in another episode about the battle between Xavier and the Shadow King? But they just referenced it. And so it's kind of one of those things, if you know, you know. And yeah, they did a really good job just because he's an odd character. He's super powerful, but he doesn't really fit in a lot of stories kind of because he's so powerful. So yeah, they did a really good job of just introducing who he is. He has this past with Professor Xavier and with Storm. Like that's hard to kind of connect all those things in all those different places.
Yeah, and yet in this one episode they managed to do all that, also tell the story of Mjolnir and get that whole thing with Storm, and it's like wow, they really put like a lot of excellent story work into this one episode. But yes, so as you were saying, Storm is now possessed by the Shadow King, and then the scene changes because of course again another super dramatic moment, so we got to take a second to kind of catch our breath. We check back in with Wolverine in Brazil this time. Now he is chasing Morph through the jungle, following his scent, and it leads him into this like random area, and he kind of falls into a trap. Like he steps on this part of the ground and it crumbles under his feet, and he falls down like this giant mine shaft. And like he like wakes up and he's like, "Hey, where'd the outside go?" Like because he's in this cave. Which is like it was just off, like a little off for the character of Wolverine to be almost slapstick, but not quite. But again, it leads to a moment with Morph, and again, Morph is just kind of telling Wolverine like, "No, you have to leave me alone. Like, stop following me. I'm a danger to myself and like everyone around me." And again, he uses his like deep connection with Wolverine and being one of the few people that like actually knows Wolverine's past because, as friends, Wolverine confided into this guy, and he uses his morphing ability again to change into and again, like, yay, cameos. He changes into Deadpool and then Omega Red, which is perfect because, foreshadows like the very next episode, spoiler alert. And then he transforms into Maverick, who like was a brand new character at this point So again, very cool. And then like he turns into a jaguar and like a rhinoceros. And then lastly, he turns into Sabretooth. I think at one point he turns into Wolverine for a little while too. And then he turns into
He
Sabretooth.
does.
Yeah,
And did
and
you
it's
notice
like,
that part where he turns into him and he like has the shape-shifting claws and Wolverine slices through him? And I think there's like the same exact scene in the first X-Men movie with Mystique.
yes.
And
Yes,
I
I
was like,
noticed
okay,
that
they
because
take
yeah, they did it, but I noticed it like you were saying, because in the movie when Wolverine slices the claws, like Mystique screams in pain. But when he slices Morph's claws, like it doesn't phase Morph whatsoever. So it was like somehow their morphing abilities are slightly different. And I don't
Yeah.
know if it's ever been explained or anything, because it's not like Morph is like a huge character in the comics or anything. So who knows? But yeah, I did. I noticed that and I was like, oh, he didn't scream or anything. Interesting. But
Yeah.
yeah, he turns into Sabretooth and he says a couple more mean things to Wolverine and kind of makes Wolverine question stuff again, because again, like he knows what Wolverine's weakness is, and is like the weakness with Wolverine is getting into his head. Like you're not going to overpower him physically. He's going to heal from whatever it is that you throw at him. The best way to stop Wolverine is through like a psychological attack. Like you have to get him to either question himself or reality or something, relive one of his past traumas. Like that's the only way you're going to defeat Wolverine. And of course, like you said earlier, it's only a friend can distract him and hurt him with words like that. But eventually he distracts Wolverine long enough that he's able to run away into the darkness of the mine. And all he says as he's running away is like, you have to let me get over this on my own. He's pretty much telling Wolverine like, no one can fix me. I have to fix myself, and I'm not going to be able to do that if you keep friggin' chasing me down. And I think that's like the turning point, because I think his storyline kind of dries up for a little while after this episode. But again, just like some great moments between Morph and Wolverine. And it's enough to satisfy that like dangling plot thread. It's like, all right, that gets rid of Morph for the next few episodes, and we can bring him back when we need him. And so from there, we go back to Africa and we finish off our Storm story.
Yes. So the possessed Storm is now flying off, I assume, to Cairo, since that's where the Shadow King wants to be. And Storm decides she's like fighting the possession. So she's sometimes talking in her own voice, and then she'll talk in the Shadow King voice when she loses out. But she says, fine, I can't stop you, but I can destroy us both. And Rogue is chasing them, trying to stop Storm from doing anything crazy. But Storm just flies straight up into the air, just as high as she can go. And Rogue has to turn back when the air gets too thin. And Storm just decides to keep going. This is the only way she can think to beat the Shadow King. And eventually she passes out. She's falling to the ground, and the Shadow King panics and leaves her body, and she's free. Luckily, Rogue catches her when she is falling and brings her back to the ground, and Mishinari is there. And Storm is trying to tell Mishinari to run, to get out of there, away from the Shadow King, but he wants to help. So they decide he can still see that tear in the astral plane. No one else can see it except for Mishinari. And so they come up with a plan to retrap the Shadow King, and Storm and Rogue are like trying to figure out how to do this. And Mishinari just runs off, gets the Shadow King's attention, and leads him straight back into the tear and into the astral plane, which it's a little trippy when they get in there. It kind of made me think of the is it the Rainbow Road or something in Mario Kart? Is what it reminded
Nice,
me of. I
yes.
was like the only thing I could think to compare it to. And so Mishinari has to run across the Rainbow Road to escape the Shadow King, and he's able to just beat him back out of the opening as it's closing up. And Storm and Rogue are able to pull him free and trap the Shadow King back in the astral plane.
Yeah, I really liked that moment too, because like Yeah, up to this point, Mijnari had just kind of been used as a pawn. And I like that he like kind of takes the agency here, and he's like, all right, well, while these ladies are arguing about how they're gonna stop this guy, I'm just gonna do what I have to do and run in there and see if I can't outrun him and beat him out. And yeah, he was able to do that. And I love that moment. It's like you gotta think that he got that heroism from Storm's influence on him at some point, you know, like you got to think that somehow he got that from her. You know, she is his godmother, and she was around when he was a kid. You just got to think that like he has this because Storm is in his life. You know, she inspires that kind of self-sacrifice and heroism, and growing up looking up to Storm, like obviously this kid's going to be a hero himself. So I loved that he just like, all right, peace out, just takes off. And he's like, hey, idiot, follow me, you know, and for whatever reason, the Shadow King's like, sure, yeah, I'll follow you back into the astral plane instead of just like going and getting Storm back. It's like she's right
Yeah.
there, but whatever, like, sure, I'll chase the kid. Why not, you know?
I can believe that the Shadow King would be that big of a jerk just to try and hurt somebody that Storm cares about. But I
Yeah.
was totally thinking the same thing about it. It was a very Storm move of him to, I mean, he doesn't even know what he's running into. He's not aware of what he's facing, and then he gets into the astral plane and he's just like, I know what I can do. I can run. And I'm gonna get out of here. It was a very Storm move of him.
Absolutely. And I like too that you know, we've seen Storm's claustrophobia get the better of her. And I like that, like in this moment of self-sacrifice on Storm, that she flies like up into the sky. So she could have flown into a cave, you know, or something, or like flown into the water or whatever, and like tried to do it that way. But I like that her instinct, you know, is to fly straight up and like away from the things that terrifies her, because like she needs all the courage that she can muster to make this sacrifice. And naturally, like she's always at home in the sky. And so like flying straight up, it's she's going to be able to draw all the courage that she needs to go through with her plan. So I love that imagery there.
Yeah, it was very, she was like finding her freedom at the same time that she's making what she thinks is going to be her final sacrifice.
Yeah,
She's like, I'm,
exactly.
if this is how things are going to go, it's going to happen on my terms.
All right, and yeah, just like that, the day is saved. Like the two ex-ladies decide to to fly home under their own power, another 7,000+ mile journey. It like
I hope
it
they
doesn't even
stop at a
seem that like
beach.
they I hope so, because it doesn't even seem that like they stopped and waited. It seemed like they defeated the Shadow King, they took Mijnari home, and they're like, all right, well, we got to fly back to New York. Like, we're exhausted from all the stuff that we just did, but yeah, we're gonna make that, you know, 7,000-mile flight. Sure, no problem. So yeah, I hope that they stopped at a beach somewhere, and at least
Yeah.
like, you know, recharge their batteries, or maybe even like call the Blackbird to come get them or something. But yeah, they're just like, all right, time to
Something.
fly home. Like,
Yeah. Hey, Jean, you didn't want to come, so hold down the fort a little longer. We're going to hit every beach between here and New York, and there's a lot.
oh man, yeah, I hope they flew into like Florida and just made the trek up the coast and didn't just like
Yeah.
fly over the Atlantic Ocean all the way into New York.
Oh, God, no. And
I guess
yeah,
they
I
could have,
think we can
yeah.
say that they went to the beach. That's now
I
canon.
was gonna say, unless they flew like north to Europe and were like, hey, let's go enjoy some cold weather instead. Like, I don't know. No, going to the beach, that's way better. Much better headcanon. All right. And so that leads us into like our obligatory final minute, right? Like that seems to be the hook of this season. They don't really have like an overarching story this season, kind of like they did with like the Sentinel threat in season one. You can probably make the argument that it's Mr. Sinister, but it does feel a little bit more disconnected in this season, with the exception of these little like obligatory 1 minute scenes at the end. And so at the end of last episode, Magneto and Xavier had met in the in Antarctica, and like weirdly enough, there was like a geyser that caused an avalanche or something like that. And so the last time we saw, they were like falling over this cliff in an avalanche. So we check in with them now, and they're like climbing out of this snow. And Xavier realizes like, oh, hey, look, I can walk. That's weird. And then Magneto realizes, oh, that is weird. Oh, and I also don't have my like magnetic powers either. Like, what the heck is going on? They take a moment to like look out at Antarctica, and inside Antarctica is this like vast jungle. And Xavier's like, whoa, what the heck is this? And Magneto's like, oh, it's a Savage Land, bro. Like, I'll tell you about it later. Don't ask questions right now. Let's escape, and then I'll fill you in because, you know, this I used to, you know, be the master here and all that. And like someone is watching them on like a monitor or something and like presses a button and just like manifests a weird caveman guy on like a pterodactyl. And this pterodactyl swoops down and it picks up Magneto and it starts flying away. And Xavier's like, oh no, you're not taking my BFF. So he like picks up a rock and like with perfect aim, chucks the rock at the, like the pterodactyl's head, which causes him to drop Magneto into a river. And then Xavier's like, oh crap, like now I have to jump in the friggin' river and save him. So he does. And then the episode ends with the two of them like going over the cliff and falling to their certain doom. So again, they're like falling to their doom, just like the previous episode. So we can probably assume that next time we'll see them, they won't be falling to their doom, but whatever. I like that they went with the same hook twice. They're just like, yeah, we'll just have them fall to their death again, whatever.
I know. I liked it. Short and sweet.
Yes. And yeah, so that is season 2, episode 3, Whatever It Takes. And like, what a great episode that was.
It really was. It was so much fun. The back and forth between Storm's story and Logan's story went together really well somehow, because the Storm was kind of the more action one and Logan's was more of the kind of psychological plot line.
Yeah, it just goes to show that like the X ladies are here to kick butt just as much as the guys are. So like, I loved it.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And I was all about Storm. I was like, oh, a Storm episode. I'm so excited.
Yes, and it really was like the first Storm-centric episode that we've gotten. Like up until this point, there was the Captive Hearts episode with the Morlocks that had like a really great Storm moment at the end, but it wasn't like a Storm-centric episode. Like she didn't necessarily drive the story here, but she was like integral to everything that happened. And like she was it's just such a great character to drive this episode. And like we've gotten Storm in Africa episodes in both of the cartoons since this one, but like neither of those series manages to catch like how important this piece of Storm's background is to the character. And like I feel like this episode really did kind of draw that connection and like build her up as this goddess that she is, that like we didn't really get that in the follow-up shows.
Yeah, and her personal connections, like not only is this her friend that's here, but this is her godson, and how, you know, it's easy to forget Storm's life before she's Storm, and seeing these people who know her, you know, as this powerful mutant, but also as just somebody who was there for really difficult parts of their life.
Yes. One thing too that I liked in this episode is we didn't really see like any kind of debilitating weakness. Like we didn't see that claustrophobia, and like she could have responded in a way, because you know it's her family. She could have responded in a way that made her weak, but it almost like empowered her even more, knowing that it was her family that she was fighting for.
Yeah, and even when she does have a flashback to when the Shadow King was controlling her life when she was really young, not long after her initial trauma that causes the claustrophobia, she doesn't shrink from it. She's like, I know what you are, I know what you can do, and I'm gonna face you.
Yeah, just such a great episode, especially for Storm. And I don't remember how many more like Storm-centric episodes we get. So I definitely hope we have more, because I'm looking forward to like really diving into this character this season. Like I was saying, like I really think that she's going to be the like standout character. And like, I know that we get like a Gambit episode later on and we get a Rogue episode later on, but like Storm has really stepped up her leadership and her importance in this season. So I'm really looking forward to seeing where she goes after this in this season. It's weird to say that, 'cause it's like, I've seen all the episodes, right? I know what's coming next. I know how all this stuff is going to go. But like, one thing about doing the show is like, I get to watch these episodes like one at a time on a weekly basis. And so I'm actually following these like serialized for the first time, really. And it's a fresh new way to watch the show. It's been a lot of fun. So yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing where Storm goes after this episode.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. Well, I think that does it. Like, I thought you did a great job with this episode. And of course, getting to learn a little bit more about your past as an X-Men fan. It's always fun to hear like origin stories, right? So like getting to hear your X-Men origin story and like, getting like, you know, chapter two of that has been a lot of fun. And I think, Noelle, I have kept you long enough for a Friday night. So I think why don't you go ahead and tell my listeners where they can find you? Although if you're a listener of my show and you're not also listening to Noelle's podcast, shame on you. But Noelle, go ahead and tell my listeners where they can find you.
Yeah, definitely. So my podcast is X-Men Unraveled. It's available most places where podcasts are. And I give updates and pictures and fun stuff on my Instagram, which is just at X-Men Unraveled.
Fantastic. Well, Noelle, again, thanks so much for coming back. I had a blast. And like I said last time, standing invitation, come back anytime you like. You want to make it a season by season thing? Awesome. If you never want to come back, I understand. I can be a lot to handle, so I understand.
Oh, no, I love coming back. So anytime. I thank you for having me.
Sure. All right. Well, Noelle, have a great night.
Thank you.
All right, bubs. I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Noelle as much as I did. It's always fun to hear about how my fellow X-Men fan / 90s kids went about their fandom in their early days. So hearing about all of her experiences with the trading cards and her action figures and the video games, oh man, it just hits super close to home. And of course, I'm a big fan of Noelle and her podcast, X-Men Unraveled. So as you heard, she is coming out with new episodes as of February 2nd. So that means as you are finishing up this episode, if you have not already, you can jump over to her podcast and listen to her most recent episode. As she was saying, she is now into the Silver Age of X-Men. She is leading up to X-Men number one, or Uncanny X-Men number one. Either way, X-Men volume one, issue one. This episode that she is now back with, she is talking about the early years of Cyclops. So make sure you go and check that one out. Bubs, if you like the show and want to keep the conversation going, you can follow me on Instagram at talkinsnicked, or you can reach out to me via email, talksnicked@gmail.com. Make sure you stay tuned to the very end of this episode and listen to the track Back from the Dead by Retcon X. Until next time, bubs.